A very special thanks to our $5 fans. James Newton, Brian Walsh, Amber Costley, Dan Harrison, Jared May.
Yeah, I think that was the last one we ever did.
Yeah.
And now I don't think you can do the voice anymore.
Oh, no.
Close, so close.
I'm so close. I'm just a different person now.
Oh, come on.
A very special thanks.
Do the voice, Jesse.
A very special thanks to our $5 fans.
There it is.
Is that it?
That's it.
Okay.
That's it. That was it.
Okay.
We're back. It's been a while.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think last time you did that, you were still in your 20s.
Oh, I was definitely in my 20s.
Yeah.
That wasn't that long ago.
Eh.
But it feels like a lifetime. Who am I anymore?
So wait, this is Let's Make Mistakes.
It is.
Just like the old days.
Just like the old days.
Just like the old days. This is my coffee.
Yes.
You got names for $5 fans?
No. How should we do this?
You know people.
I don't have friends anymore.
I mean, if I'm the only person that you're communicating with, that's not going to be a good life, Jesse.
Yeah, that's true. I have 5 friends, and I only talk to you on Slack.
You need to meet some people.
I don't know how.
Well,
also, I don't like meeting people.
Well, I mean, that's fair. And most of them are pretty awful.
Yeah.
But, I mean, don't kids all do like the swipey lefty, swipey righty thing now to meet people?
Ooh, I can't do that.
Why not?
I don't like it.
Well, I don't blame you. But you know, I've never had to do that and hopefully never will. God, I would die alone. I'm going to die alone anyway, let's be honest.
Yeah, so you understand.
Yeah. I can't imagine the whole swiping. I mean, I'm not a good-looking person. I would have 0 friends.
You're talking about using, like, dating apps that, like, refining friends. I guess people do that, but, you know.
Well, okay. I mean, yeah, that's different.
Yeah.
How do you make friends?
I don't. I just have friends that I've had for a long time. And maybe like every couple of years, like a
person or two
gets
that
on. Well, because I used to like, you know, have jobs and like work around other people.
Yeah, yeah. You meet people at work.
You meet people at work and then you meet their friends. But I've been self-employed for like 6 years now.
Well, okay, so you need to find a different way to meet people.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so your friends, I mean, they work at places where they meet people, right?
You know, most of my friends are self-employed now, too.
Oh, God, you need to throw a party.
I know. I used to throw parties.
You did. You used to throw great parties.
I did. And then I spun that into my profession, where now I just do professional events.
Well, okay. So do you meet people at the professional events that you want to be friends with?
I mean, yes, but they're from all over the place. And also, like, when I'm running events, there's kind of a bit of a professional, like, wall that I have to put up.
Well, thank God that you have that, because most people that throw those events don't.
Yeah.
We're not going there.
Yeah, we're not naming names.
Mostly, we're here today to find Jesse some friends.
Okay. That is why I decided to start the podcast again.
So what are you going to do with these friends? Like, if I were friends with Jesse Char, what could I look forward to? Like you call me up, say, hey, let's go to the movies or let's take a trip or
no,
like, what's that look like?
Definitely not. Definitely not. To be a friend of mine is to invite me to hang out like once a month for a really long time. And I either say yes and then I cancel at the last minute.
Oh, you can't do that.
Or I say I'm busy and then I don't do anything. But then, you know, once like maybe 1 in 6 times, I'll say, yes, let's do it. And I'll actually show up and I'll have a great time. I'm not very good at like having like a like occasional friends. I have like kind of like a crew of like best friends and we do everything together.
So you go for quality here.
I go for quality.
So
yeah.
A few people.
Yeah.
But you go in hard and you're like you're best friends with a few people and you share everything.
Yeah. And actually, you referred to my group of friends as the super friends once. And this is years ago, and it's kind of the same core group of people.
Okay.
And that's still kind of how it works, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So it's a pretty tight little group there. That,
yeah.
Like, and I then, mean, you and guys all just, go to Disneyland like 8 times a year, right?
We go to Disneyland like 8 times a year. But most of the time, like, the kind of friends that I like having are the ones that I can just do nothing with or, like, be alone together with.
So— Do you show up like at each other's apartments unannounced and just like sit on the couch and stuff?
You know, not unannounced anymore. I think.
But like, can I come over and sit on the couch all day?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's couch friends. Couchella is what
couch. I
we
like
call
that.
It. Yeah.
So I just, you know, I don't want to do anything, but I want to not do anything at my friend Jesse's apartment.
Yeah, maybe split a delivery order.
Sure.
Yeah.
Maybe you're binging the same show.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's just called hanging out with people.
Yeah, I do that.
Right. So you don't have to have special events.
No.
I think that's when you know that people are actually your friends, when you can just like hang out and you don't have to like talk
exactly.
all the time.
Now, having said that, I think that there are also people who do want to participate in that, but like who I don't want to participate in it with. Like not ever. I think that a lot of people think that they're good at doing nothing, but that's not true.
I'm great at doing nothing.
I'm great at doing nothing.
I think we're both probably very good at doing nothing.
Yeah. I like people where you can truly sit in a room with them for hours and not say anything to each other. And like,
oh,
there's nothing
God.
Weird about it.
Bless those people.
Yeah. And for a lot of people, understandably, it is a weird thing to do. So, you know, not everybody can handle it.
I think that's when I really start trusting somebody.
Yeah.
Is when I know that we can be in the same space. We don't have to chat all the time.
Yeah. You don't even have to be doing the same thing.
And we're both cool with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, no new friends.
So no
for the
new
time
friends.
Being. No swiping. I don't like that.
So wait a minute. Do you want to talk about that?
I mean, we already are.
I mean, well, by the way, you answering no to that didn't mean that I wasn't going to.
Yeah.
Because I mean, that's how this works.
Yeah.
Right. Is everybody doing that now?
I think for the most part, that is what many. Yeah, everybody does that. Everybody does that. And what you were saying earlier, you're like, oh, if I put my picture on it, I would have no friends. What I was going to say is that I think what's a better commodity on any sort of swiping, any profile-based finding other people to be friends with or date or whatever is like being a good writer. Because that's the problem with every single person's profile
so
on everything.
So does what people write about themselves, does that hold more, does that carry more water than the photo?
Yes.
Can a good description make up for an ugly human being?
Yes.
Thank God. Okay. So if I'm ever in that market again, I know that I can write my way out
of it. Absolutely.
Thank God. Also, I'll be carrying a dog of some sort in the photo.
Well, that's not anything special on any of those.
Yeah, I know, but that at one point it was, and then everybody started doing it, and now it's just the price of entry,
yeah.
So to speak.
Yeah.
A dog.
Dog pictures, Burning Man pictures.
See, a Burning Man picture would just, what's the bad swipe? That's our episode name, by the way. What's the bad swipe?
The bad swipe would be hiking pictures. So many hiking pictures.
No, I mean, but which way is the bad way?
Oh,
left is bad?
Left.
Left is bad.
Yeah. That's pretty ingrained in society, right? Is like anti.
Yeah, as a left-handed person.
Yeah.
So if I'm swiping this way, if like, eh.
Yeah.
Eh.
Yeah.
And this way is get in my basket.
Yes.
Get in my basket.
Add to cart.
Add to cart.
Yeah.
No. Add to cart. Got it. By the way, that was some motion comedy there for radio, which...
And we needed Foley for that.
Right. Okay, so if I want to end up in the basket, what mm-hmm. am I not doing? Like hiking photos are bad?
Hiking photos are just like very common and like do you really need to see like a picture of like somebody's back where they're like shirt is sweaty and they're wearing shorts and they're like standing with their fists on their hips like on a mountain or
no,
on a hill
I'm
or
really
like
I think this relationship is going to be exhausting.
Yeah.
Like this person.
Yeah. I mean, and aside from, it's not just the pictures. It's in almost, I'd say like a good 90% of men's dating profiles cite hiking and cycling as their primary interests. Why is that relevant?
You know what I think I would just say, like, I've got an incredibly comfortable couch and I've got Netflix and HBO.
Yeah, but then even that, I don't know. Everything sounds 100 times more suspicious when it's on a dating profile.
All right, so no hiking photos.
No hiking photos. Talking about beer and whiskey, a lot of people talk about, like, drinking on their profiles.
Really?
Really, and it's like, you know, that's fine, but, like, why is that? Why does that matter? Why does that make you an interesting person?
Like, so how much do you, how much, what do you, okay, so I'm old.
Yeah.
And I haven't dated in forever. And I'm not ever sure that I ever did. But back then, like, there was none of this. And you just, like, met somebody socially. Mm-hmm. And then you slowly found out more and more about them. Mm-hmm. And it was all very interesting, or not. But if it was interesting, then you kept on going. Like, hey, like, what kind of music do you like? Like, but you, like, found all of this, like, you found out over a matter of time.
Yeah. It was a nice slow reveal.
Right. It was a nice slow reveal. And if it turned out that you, like, really liked the same movie or really liked the same band, then it's like, oh, that means we're going to go on to the next slow reveal. Mm-hmm. You kind of, like, established a little bond.
Yeah.
With all the slow reveals. Now it's like, I gather, you get this description and it's all very careful. Oh my God, are people paying other people to write this shit yet?
Yes. There are dating coaches and,
profile doctors.
And,
oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay. So now I've got like, it's like I'm looking at the back of a baseball card now.
Yes. But if the baseball player wrote his or her own card.
Right.
So, you know, they're baseball players, not writers.
I'm really good at baseball, it would say.
Yes.
And then you decide, like, based on all of that right there, whether you're going to go out with this person.
Yeah. Which the answer is always no.
I mean, at least, oh, so on the positive side, you're looking at a database of people who've already said, yes, I'm open to this idea of going out with somebody.
Yeah.
So you're not, like, hitting up on people you shouldn't be hitting up.
True. Yes.
That's good. That's good, right?
Yeah.
So that's not all bad.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's nobody on those sites who shouldn't be on those sites.
Definitely not.
Oh God, no.
Yeah.
Anyway, why are we talking about dating sites today?
I don't know.
We hit record
we
and all of a sudden.
We've never talked about anything like this before either.
Ever. This is Let's Make Mistakes.
This has been Let's Make Mistakes.
Are we done?
No, I don't think so.
And this is Mike.
This is Jesse.
And we're back.
We're back.
We're back.
How does it feel to be back?
We just hit record and we just started. Just went right into
I feel like we should start for real. You know,
I think we did. I mean, that's how we've always started.
Cold open.
Uh-huh. We just went right into it.
Yeah, we went right into it.
All of a sudden.
That was very organic and very strange.
And we're both dying alone.
But that's, no, you're not dying alone.
Oh, that's not going to last.
I'm dying alone.
I mean, she's got one foot out the door.
You guys are fine. You guys are the best.
We'll see.
You got Rupert. You have all those Lego things.
You're 32.
I'm 32.
You just started.
I'm young. I'm still young.
Incredibly young.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know what's interesting is, like, I'm 32, but I have my, like, kind of core, all of, like, my industry contacts and, like, the people I've been hanging out with since I was, you know, fresh out of college have been, like, at least a generation older than me.
Well,
my
business
partner is a generation older. Like, so I feel like I have some of the grumpiness of somebody slightly older than 32.
Well, you've been doing this for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, you've been, it's like you started in this industry. Mm-hmm. And just climbed.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I feel like I
don't mean that as a pejorative, by the way.
Oh no, but I think maybe by San Francisco standards, I don't feel like I've climbed because I don't have any money.
Well, you know, God.
But
I know that's not normal, right?
It's not. It's not normal. Yeah. It's just, you know, I've lived in San Francisco for 10 years now. And so it's a very strange, rich bubble that we live in.
Well, I'm not rich.
Yeah, that's why we can be on a show together.
That's why we need to be on a show together.
Yeah.
By the way, so we want to talk about our sponsor. I'm just kidding. We don't have a fucking sponsor.
Yeah.
Because we're low rent as shit.
Yeah.
And then we would have to read, like, we'd have to say something about mattresses for 10 minutes.
Mattresses, razors, sunglasses.
And all of a sudden, you're listening to Gruber for 3 hours, and it's like, who even does that?
I guess people who have commutes.
Oh, God, nobody needs to commute that badly.
Maybe not in San Francisco. There's other people who, like, drive to work and sit in L.A. traffic and whatnot. I don't know. I don't listen to podcasts. Do you listen to podcasts?
Not really, because I'm not done listening to music.
Uh-huh.
And music seems just a lot more fun.
Podcasts, because I don't have a commute, I work out of my living room. I feel like if I'm going to be listening to something, I want it to be an audiobook. And if I'm listening to something like more recreationally, I want it to be watching television.
Yeah.
So podcasts are just like in a weird place for me where they don't fit my lifestyle.
And and it's not to say that there aren't some amazing ones out there. They've gotten really, really good.
Oh, there's some great ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. I think it's the lifestyle.
Like, yeah.
Most people have a commute.
Mm-hmm.
I have a little commute.
Yeah. 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 You have a little commute. Do you live 2 miles from the office?
Yeah, 2 miles. But it's not a half hour drive somewhere.
Yeah. So far we've talked about dating apps and how we don't listen to podcasts.
No, we have sad lives.
We do.
We do.
You don't have a sad, you travel, you write, you.
Yeah, because there's nothing as exciting as writing.
I think that what is most exciting is having written, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
No, I mean, the majority of a writer's life is anxiety,
mm-hmm.
that I should be writing right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you get over that, it's self-loathing because what you're currently writing sucks.
So I want to get back to the first part of, like, once you get over that, how do you get over that, the anxiety when you're not writing?
Well, at some point, you just decide, I just need to write.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah.
So the anxiety ends when you actually do your job.
Right. Okay. And then it turns into self-loathing.
I was hoping that there was maybe another way out of it.
No, there's no good thing in there.
Rats.
No, you're looking for, there's no positive.
Yeah. Okay. And so step two is self-loathing.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then there's a short period of relief once you've written.
Yeah. When you experience self-loathing, like, what do you hate about yourself?
Everything.
Yeah. Everything?
Everything.
Yeah. I understand that.
Well, I mean, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Everything you're describing is very similar to planning conferences. Although maybe it's very similar to being a person who is good at things. But
I can't imagine the hell of planning a conference.
Oh, it's hell. I love it. I love it. But it's hell.
I mean, as a person who speaks at conferences,
mm-hmm.
and who is absolutely horrible, not on purpose, but, you know, the effect's the same, horrible at replying to conference organizers' mm-hmm. emails. I can't imagine having to deal with, 10 of me.
I mean, it depends. On one hand, as a conference organizer, sometimes I appreciate it when people don't reply right away because it buys me time. Sometimes, uh-huh. you have so many moving pieces and you need to get things sent out, but, you don't want a hard day of work to be followed up with a day where every single person has responded and is now expecting you to send something right back. So sometimes it's fine, I guess, unless they give you a deadline.
So one of my favorite email moves mm-hmm. is I've somebody's emailed me and I can come up with a question that just lobs the email back across the net,
mm-hmm.
buying me another couple days,
mm-hmm.
especially if you do that on a Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And, I just lobbed it over to their end of the net and now they're not going to reply back till Monday and I'm good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's always nice. Whenever I email speakers especially, so maybe this is a good question for you as a person who speaks a lot at conferences.
All right.
Is I try and, like, anytime I write an email to people, I try and reduce the amount of work I think it's going to take them to reply to my email.
Oh, my God. Thank you.
And sometimes that includes, like, the email maybe being slightly longer than an initial outreach should be. But I almost think that it's better to, like, add 45 seconds of read time to lessen what could potentially be, like, 15 minutes of, like, trying to reply to somebody time.
Oh, like your initial email?
Yeah, my initial email. Like, I break things out into, like, little sections and have bullet points. And sometimes I go super crazy and I'll, like, color code things.
Oh, like, no, I'm not going to read that.
Yeah, like, does that, like, and I always worry about that because I think some people respond really well to things like that. But then also, like, if you open an email and you see all this shit in there, you just, like, don't even read it, right?
No, yeah. I mean, again, you're asking me.
Yeah.
So I'm going to answer me and knowing that, you know, so know right away that other people might answer this completely differently. Mm-hmm. But the longer an email, the more I'll take to even look at it.
Yeah. I get that.
Yeah.
And I factor that in as well. Like, it should all show up in one screen or, like, be skimmable or whatever.
So are you talking about, like, the email that you send out, like, hey, will you speak at my conference?
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like there's so many typical follow-up questions and, like, things that people would need to know. I don't like doing cold outreaches where I'm just like, are you available this day? And then they have to, like, spend a bunch of time, like, Googling what the conference is and, like, figuring things out on their own. I want to try and make it easy for people.
So here's what I want.
Yeah, like, what makes it easy for you?
What makes it really easy mm-hmm. for me? First, like, so give me, like, a little intro about the conference. Mm-hmm. So it's just so that I know, like, what I'm getting myself into to make sure it's real. Mm-hmm. Tell me where it is. Tell me when it is. Mm-hmm. And tell me what it pays.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I do all of that.
Yeah. And then invite me to have a follow-up conversation. Because the first thing that email needs to do is to spark my interest.
Yeah.
And if it sparks my interest, I need to make sure that it matches up with my schedule.
Yeah.
So, hey, I'm excited about this thing. And, oh, yeah, it's on a day that I could actually do. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I would like to find out more about this. And then I'll reply to you and say, yeah, I could totally do this. Let's talk more.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't remember who it was or what conference it was, but there was, like, a big, like, Twitter blow up at some guy who, like, posted on his LinkedIn about, like, people who speak at conferences and how, like, they shouldn't expect to get paid or, like, do you remember this? Like,
I do remember
that. Some guy who's, like, a dick about it. I feel like I don't like calling strangers dicks, but he was a dick.
Well, I don't know him. Mm-hmm. So I'm not ready to call him a dick. I will say that was a dickish move. So that particular act.
Yeah.
Was dickish.
Yeah.
That might have been a dickish act by a nice person. I don't know. Look, see, I'm all, like, grown up now.
I know. And yeah. I'm the one calling people dicks.
I know.
What happened?
It's that generational shift.
Yeah, it's true.
Like, now you have to take over for me.
Yeah. And now are you going to become a millennial?
No, it goes the other way. I become your grandfather.
Okay.
No, there'll be somebody coming up behind you who becomes, you know, your millennial.
Yeah, the Generation Z. Do they have a nickname yet, Gen Z?
I think so. I don't know. That stuff means nothing.
Yeah.
We all know that stuff means nothing.
It means anything. When I worked at Mule back I wasn't a millennial yet.
No. I watch Stranger Things. Mm-hmm. I get all the references. Mm-hmm. Young people don't. So, boom.
I only saw the first season of Stranger Things.
Really?
Yeah.
No. We watched the whole third season yesterday.
Was it good?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, we wouldn't have watched the whole thing if it wasn't.
Yeah. I watch a lot of full television series that I don't even like. Because sometimes it's better than thinking about my own life.
Anyway, you should get paid to, you pay your speakers?
Yeah. And it's a humble honorarium, but we give what we can and we try and make their experience as nice as possible.
Here's what I want. I want to know how much you can pay me, like, as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. And, like, I understand that some conferences can pay a lot and some can't.
Yeah.
But as soon as we have that conversation, and, you know, I'm not always going to make the choice of whether I want to go there based on how much I'm getting paid.
Unless it's a lot of money. Oh,
well, yes. Yeah. I mean, seriously, if you're offering me a ton, I'm going to find a way to go.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you could be offering me, like, a modest honorarium. It could be a place I've always really wanted to go at a time of year where I'm otherwise not doing anything. And then, yeah, let's go. Let's do it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just not being able to pay a ton shouldn't keep you from reaching out to people.
Yeah, definitely.
Because you never know.
You never know.
You should always pay people's travel.
Always, no matter what.
That's non-negotiable.
Travel and lodging, non-negotiable. It is unacceptable to ask somebody to speak at a conference in another city than from where they live, yeah, and not pay their way there. Like, they shouldn't have to pay to provide free work.
No, flight and lodging, yeah, is always. And you know what? If somebody can't speak at your conference because you can't pay them, mm-hmm, you don't know what their situation is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you invite somebody and they say, no, I can't go because I can't do it for free, mm-hmm, then that's it. That's the end of the conversation.
Yeah.
Like, you thank them for their time.
Yeah.
And everybody walks away because you don't know what their situation is.
Yeah. How do you feel about conferences that pay everybody a different amount versus paying everybody the same amount of money?
I'm a nice socialist, so I, mm-hmm, think so here, I'll tell you a story. So I was invited to speak somewhere once. I won't tell you where. I said, that's great. I'd love to go there. Here's what I charge. And they had sent me a list of all the other people who were speaking there. And they replied with, well, you know, if we pay you that, we have to pay everybody that. And I just replied with, I think that's great. Let me tell them. And that was it. And then they emailed me back. Wait, did you actually tell people that? Like, yeah, I did. I did. I told them that they were all now getting paid this amount. I think everybody should get paid as much as you can possibly pay them.
Yes.
I think if you pay everybody the same, I think that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. You know, honestly, I don't speak at a conference because I'm the highest paid person there. Mm-hmm. If I found out that everybody was getting paid the same, I'd be thrilled.
Yeah.
If I found out that somebody advocating to get paid more ended up getting other people paid more, I think that's great too. Mm-hmm. What I cannot deal with, what pisses me off, is people who don't advocate for themselves and then get angry at people who do.
Yeah. Or get angry at the organizers in, right, certain situations. Yeah.
Because if I'm at a conference and another speaker asks me, how much did you get paid? I will tell them. Mm-hmm. I will tell them because I don't think that should be a secret. Mm-hmm. And if they're willing to ask, I'm willing to answer. And I think every organizer should know that.
Yeah.
That speakers share this information between themselves. Yeah. And what happens And you know, sometimes they say, oh, yeah, that's what I'm getting too. Like, fantastic. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they'll say, wait a minute, how did you get that much? Well, I asked for it. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, they didn't offer me that much. Nobody ever offers you that much. Yeah. That's not what I said. I didn't say I was offered more. I said I asked for more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I've definitely, like, so this past year, like, I made the decision to just pay everybody or offer everybody the same amount of money and pay, uh-huh, everybody the same amount of money. In the past, like, you know, when I was just starting out, it was kind of a case-by-case basis, and I would, like, see who I could get for cheap or free and see who, like, wanted money and would weigh that all out. And I understand that for newer conferences where cash flow is, like, a big question mark and you don't really know how much you're going to be making, yeah, and don't know how much you have to contribute. But I think once you've been around for a while, like, you kind of have a sense for, like, how much the speaker budget is every single year.
Right.
And then you just kind of divide that between everybody. And if they don't want to speak, at the rate that you're able to pay everybody.
Well, they might not be able to. Yeah. It might not be a question of wanting to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like some people work at, you know, large companies where, you know, going off to speak at a conference is perfectly cool with the company. So they're getting paid their salary.
Yeah.
Plus whatever you're paying them is just a bonus. Mm-hmm. On top of that, and that's fine.
Yeah.
Some people actually earn a living off what they make speaking at conferences.
Yes.
And I'm in that second group because I don't work at a big company that pays my salary.
Yeah.
I earn my living doing like workshops and talks and you know, writing. So I've combined the three hardest things to earn a living. They're not actually. I mean, it's pretty cush.
Yeah.
But that's how I earn my living is doing talks. So
yeah.
I got to go with the talks that pay me. And, you know, I'm happy. And that's not saying that I get paid for all the talks because every once in a while, like a professional organization or a school will say like, hey, will you come and talk to our students or our members? And we can't pay you. And it's like, oh, yeah, students. If I can, I will. I'm happy to do that. The only thing I think where the bullshit comes is when people have secrets about this shit. I think everything should be upfront. Like if you send me an email and says, come speak at my conference, I'll pay you a grand plus travel. Then I know right away. Right away what's being offered.
Yeah.
And in your case, if you say I'm paying all the speakers a grand, then I know what the situation is.
Yeah.
By the way, I just made that number up. I don't know what you actually pay people.
It's a different number than that.
10 grand. Jesse pays all her speakers
Everybody 10 grand.
10 grand.
Yeah.
She flies in business class.
You know, business class. Business class is so expensive. I have flown people business class before because, like, they requested it. And, but I don't do that for everybody. It's a lot of money. It makes a difference between like paying $300 to fly somebody out round trip versus like sometimes $2,000.
Yeah. You know, I wrote all of this stuff up a couple of weeks,
about
a month ago. No, I wrote all about it in Dear Designer, my biweekly column on Medium.
There you go.
No, I wrote up a whole thing about getting paid to speak at conferences and how to go about it.
Oh, that's good. I always like wonder how much I should be writing about conferencey things, given that I am a conference organizer. I don't know what's cool for me to say and what I shouldn't say, and I don't know.
I mean, I think you get to make that up.
I do get to make that up.
I think you get to decide.
Yeah.
I mean, don't follow somebody else's rules.
I don't follow anybody else's rules.
Do what feels right to you.
Yeah. It takes a lot of time for me to figure out what feels right to me.
Well, I mean, how long have you been doing Layers?
We just completed our fifth event. So it's been 4 years plus a little.
Which is great. Like, congratulations. Like, just throwing one of these is amazing.
Yeah.
So you've done four?
Five.
You've done five.
Over the course of 4 years, yeah.
So that's five, and you're going to do it next year?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So you've done it five times.
Yeah.
And none of them's killed you.
No.
Or at least none of them's made you say, fuck it, that was the last one.
No, I have really taken to conference organization. And as much as, like, it does crush me, like, I am crushed by the end of a conference, it's something that I still enjoy doing a lot. So, yeah, it doesn't kill me.
But you still enjoy doing it, so that's great.
Yeah, it tries to kill me, but it doesn't.
Well, I mean, the great thing about organizing conferences is you learn very, very early on whether you're the right type of person to do it or not. Like, the first one will kill you if you're the wrong type of person.
Yes.
And, I mean, you're doing an amazing job here, 5 years in a row.
Yeah, 5 years in a row and have never lost money at it.
Really?
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's for those who maybe think that that's a little bit tongue-in-cheek, it's like a pretty serious thing. Like, a lot of conferences maybe break even if they're lucky.
Yeah, I think breaking even is
kind of the norm slash goal for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But I don't agree with that. I think
you should make money on it.
I think that you should make money off of it. It's so much work, and you're providing a lot of people with something with a valuable experience. And if your business plan is not such that you're making any, like, you have to make a, you have to make a little bit of money, or, you know, a livable amount of money off of it. That's what makes sense.
I mean, I do it to make money. The conference people do it to make money. People who go to conferences, they're going there to learn things that help them make more money.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus, everyone's a capitalist until they have to write a check.
Yeah. I think that there are so many, there are a lot of conferences that are produced for marketing purposes. And I think that a lot of people conflate like those types of conferences and conventions with like independent ones where like a conference needs to look a certain way, but then like you see people spending $20,000 on a stage budget, and that is the money that they could have been keeping for themselves.
Yeah.
It doesn't, yeah.
I like European conferences.
Oh, yeah?
Better than American conferences.
What is the difference between a European and an American conference?
I'm so glad you asked. You've been to XOXO, right?
Yes.
Okay, from what I've seen of XOXO, XO follows more of a European conference model.
Okay.
It's like a festival.
Yeah.
And it pulls people in because they're interesting, and they're not. It's not 100% work focused. It's an expansive list of speakers, so it may start with like a central idea, but it expands upon that idea by bringing in people from, like, you know, neighboring fields and stuff. I think that's what you get at European conferences, whereas the U.S. conference circuit, which is all, not all, but a lot of sad hotel ballrooms.
Oh, the hotel ballrooms.
The hotel ballroom conference with, you know, a CSS talk followed by an accessibility talk. And not that these are bad things. These are not bad things.
No, they're useful. It's a very different type of thing.
Right.
And I guess, like, by that standard layers, the one that I do is more European probably.
And then if you ask somebody about a conference and they tell you that the food was good, that's not a conference you want to go to. I mean, that shouldn't be the main thing that people think about.
Food is like we refer to the food that we serve as snack sessions. It's like a part of the lineup of the conference.
Sure.
Because I believe that when you travel anywhere to go to a conference and you're just stuck inside of a hotel ballroom eating like weird catered, like chafing dish eggs, that's not.
Off of tables with that weird tablecloth that makes it. Tries to make it hide the fact that it's a table.
Yeah. Yeah. Not that tablecloths are bad, but yes, it's the whole thing. It's just like, what's the point of gathering people together in a new city so that they can experience the inside, the bowels of the Marriott, you know? I think that negates the purpose of flying in for a conference in the first place.
I just did one in Amsterdam that was on a houseboat, houseboat.
That seems like fun.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. You're getting an experience out of it.
Yeah. And, you know, I was sandwiched between, it was like a BBC reporter and then a duo who was singing songs based on Instagram comments. It's hilarious.
And then
me or something like that, followed by a dancer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great.
And I was like, wow, I wanted to hear the other stuff. That's, you know, I like it when there's other stuff that I want to hear.
Yeah, I'm a really bad conference attendee. Like, I'm one of the worst conference attendees. I'm the person who, like, goes and skips every single talk and maybe, like... there are certain popular conferences I've been to where I go and I pick up my badge and then I just never go back to the conference itself.
Like South by Southwest.
Yeah, I never even had. I mean, I went 1 year. I didn't even have a pass to South by Southwest. But yeah, similar to that type of experience where it's just like, it's just about dipping in and being in the same city as a bunch of other people at the same time to me, which is why when I produce conferences, I try and make it for people who are like me and don't want to go to anything. So I have to work harder to make it good and appealing and not feel like a commitment to be present during the event.
So what's next for Layers? Is it always going to be tied to WWDC?
I think that there will always be a layers tied to WWDC. I think that what could potentially be next for it is doing another one that is in another part of the country or another part of the world at a different time.
Like outside the US?
Yeah, that's like scary because producing a conference costs so much money and it's really hard, and sourcing vendors is hard, and doing something that's that remote is really scary to me. I think that the quality would go down a little bit if I weren't to be able to be on site a lot before the event happens. But that's me. I mean, I know that a lot of people do that all the time. They plan remote events, but like the way that Elaine, my business partner, and I work is like, so we like for Layers, which is in San Jose, we will spend days just hanging out around San Jose, going to different like bars and cafes and like making friends with the staff on site and doing that kind of like, we lay that kind of groundwork with like the people of the city to make friends with vendors and get in with people.
How much time do you spend down in San Jose?
When we first moved down to San Jose, we would probably go like 1 or 2 days a month for like the 4 to 6 months leading up to it, at least. And now it's maybe like for the 4 to 6 months leading up to it, we'll go down like once, like for a day every 6 weeks or so, just to meet people and see what's new and what's different. But I think that's really important, is just like absorbing yourself into the general surroundings of where all of the attendees are going to be hanging out, to kind of understand what people's experience is going to be as just like a visitor to that city.
Yeah.
And understanding like, ooh, does it suck between the hours of 3 to 5? Because like maybe all the restaurants are closed and there's nothing to do, and kind of being able to design your event around like what the true experience of being in that area is.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Of course it makes sense.
Damn.
But I don't think that it's something that a lot of other conference organizers think about. We take our jobs very seriously.
Well, good for you.
Yeah. Well, you know, part of it is like, I think it's great that I worked at Mule when I was younger. And 23. I know. It gave me a set of standards, unwavering standards that I can't not think about in everything that I do now. It's a lot.
Well, that's nice to hear.
Well, it's important. But I think that like the way that I learned how to think about design projects was very important to my
career. So you learned something here.
I learned something here. Oh. Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool.
Like what design actually is.
Well, I mean, we tried. Not everybody got it, by the way.
Well, not everybody gets it.
And that's true.
People are phonies.
So why are we doing this again?
A podcast?
Yeah.
I don't know, because we had
people were asking for it.
People were, yeah. Yeah, we get tweets every once in a while.
Yeah.
People liked it. I think I was interested in revisiting it because it's been a while. I kind of have a different career now. Like we ended kind of when I started doing Layers, things just, I mean, in my own life, my schedule changed and everything. But
yeah,
you
went off to do your own thing.
I went off to do my own thing. And now what I've kind of realized is that before I didn't consider myself a designer, and now I think I do.
Told you.
Yeah. I know you did tell me, and I didn't consider myself to be one. And now, even though I'm not maybe a designer by the standards of like, you know, I couldn't go get a design job at a company, but the work that I do
I
probably could, because a lot of people think that I'm a traditional like designer, like a UI designer.
A lot of people who think they're designers aren't.
That too.
Yes. I think that's a bigger
problem.
No,
I do agree. I probably could go out and get a job at as a designer at a company. I wouldn't feel comfortable doing that. But I think that the work that I do on the conference is design work.
You designed a conference.
In its truest sense. In a much truer sense than other people, maybe who make a lot more money working at startups as quote unquote designers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're not going to take sponsors.
No, that's a changing industry right now.
Yeah. But we're going to bring back $5 fans.
Yes. And the voice, if I can still do it. I think my voice is lower than it used to be.
No, it's not. Okay. you're going to do the voice and we're going to,
we'll gonna, just,
we're going to edit it back to the front.
We'll fix it in post.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
But how can people be $5 sponsors? Did we figure that out? Do we still have that going?
What did we use before?
Did we? Oh,
we used somebody's.
It's not around anymore.
Yeah.
We use Tugboat.
Tugboat. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is Patreon still around? Or are they?
I think Patreon is still around.
I think
that Patreon is like the.
Are they giving Nazis money?
Ooh, I don't know.
Are they hosting Nazis?
It's hard to say. I mean,
all right, we'll look
Nazis
into
are
it.
Everywhere now, you know?
Well, I mean, that doesn't mean that we should be okay with it.
Oh, I'm not saying I'm not okay with anything. That's why I don't go out. That's why I don't do anything. Everybody's a Nazi who's going to murder me.
You know, that's not totally wrong.
It's not.
It's not. Okay.
That's
close.
I can't
That's
really
so
remember.
Close.
It was high. It was higher. It was higher. It was higher. I want to get back to that place. I need to find it.
So do I.
Find that voice.
At our age, sometimes we need help.
We do need help. I remember it being a little bit more condescending.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yeah, more sarcasm.
It was a little bit more. A very special thanks to our $5 fans.
Southern. You got like a little Southern twang in there.
I know, what's going on?
Go Valley. Valley.
Valley. A very special thanks to our $5 fans. $5.
No, there's
dollar,
too much.
Yeah. A very special thanks to our... No, I'm not getting it. I'm not hitting it.